The arrival of the trillionaire. Well, it was hardly going to be a subtle statement, thought Pendleton. But the superyacht that entered into the Grand Harbour, Malta, was, to say the least, pretty obscene. It was a bloated piece of opulence that weighed in at 20,000 tons and measured out to 600 feet in length. Its 85 crew were all female, and they lined the gunwale in somewhat obscene, statuesque beauty. Almost divine design, thought Pendleton. Not even Michelangelo Bellini could have painted or carved anything so dreamy. Their immaculate white uniforms gave them the air of something angelic and celestial, added to which the backdrop of a super white yacht, and Pendleton thought he was definitely gliding up a passerelle towards heaven. Once aboard, he realized the enormity of the vessel. There wasn't the slightest murmur or movement. In fact, eerie silence, as though he'd entered into a vacuum-sealed bell jar. But Pendleton wasn't impressed with wealth. In fact, he had an aversion towards it. He usually found out that anyone that purveyed such pretension and pomposity usually lacked, shall we say, spirit and personality. Doubtless, he thought, at the end of this celestial rainbow, there'd be another king wearing a crown sat on a golden pot, with servants ready to polish his privileged posterior. Pendleton found the mammalian primate species to which he belonged very annoying. In fact, he looked upon it as a mistake of mortality. This arboreal adaption come contraption basically was a chimpanzee, which had enough testosterone to power a psychopathic elephant, and inside its brain it had a reptilian dinosaur brainstem to control it. No, this was a creationist catastrophe, thought Pendleton. And he had no intention of meeting its maker, who seemed complicit in, shall we say, contributing to the vicarious redemption of his crucified son. Added to which, two-thirds of all humanity now seemed to, shall we say, sport the God's head of supremacy. Inside carried the sacred schizophrenia of this very dangerous Abrahamic apartheid, which he'd come to actually, well, it was one of the things he intended to discuss, the almost satanic savagery of the Sapien. But he did have hope of, shall we say, training his fellow species into an empathetic emancipation. But he needed the help of this, well, subtle trillionaire. Pendleton was a genius with computers. And he was intent on, shall we say, reshaping things with the aid and abetment of a silicon saviour, God Google. Hopefully before his Homo sapien species destroyed with its shamanic stupidity the Garden of Eden that it was living. But it was touch and go. They hadn't got much time and, hopefully the person he'd come to see would be as fanatical about his plan of a takeover technology as he was. Pendleton was shown into the superyacht's grand salon. There it seemed to have a, shall we say, somewhat of a sun pavilion, where iridescent coloured light, sunlight, was descending into, well, an angel's descent, giving yet more celestial, shall we say, colour to the figure that now walked quickly towards him, as though he be, well, as though he be his relative or long-lost brother. He embraced Pendleton and kissed him on both cheeks. Ah, at last, at last, my dear, beautiful saviour, you've arrived. I beg your pardon? Saviour? What, have we met before? Oh, yes. It was a long time ago, but you obviously don't remember, but I have changed somewhat in appearance, obviously, but we have met. It was at school, you know, school, Eton. Briefly, I was there once a convent. Oh, well, I don't recall. Well, I have actually sort of had a bit of a makeover, shall we say. I see. Well, looking round here, you've obviously got a shilling or two to spend. I suppose you can afford the best plastic surgeon money can buy. They've obviously done a perfect job. No scarification or anything. Oh, no, nothing like that. No. Anyhow, well, as I say, when I was a schoolboy, you were the one that actually, well, rescued me from what was going to be quite a savage beating. Did I? So, what were you? Were you sort of, which house were you in? And were you a wet barb or a dry barb? Which, did we meet at one of the clubs or? No, 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 it was, you rescued me from what was going to be a savage beating by your own friends and things. It was a bit of gallant behaviour, I must admit. In fact, so gallant that you were ostracised by them and, well, you ostracised them as well, and you couldn't care less whether you, well, you never did really particularly sort of befriend them ever again. Right. I do now, it's coming back to me, yes, but, but you, I still can't place you. No, as I say, it's a bit of a, I've had a bit of a makeover, but we'll talk about that. It's, but can you remember what you said at that confrontation? You know, can you remember as I was, well, did I say that the truth should never be the casualty of any confrontation? Yes, that was it. The truth, you see. You put the truth before everything. That's why really we're here, because I checked all your background and DNA and every single thing right down to... And suddenly, it was you, and I hadn't seen you for so long, so I thought we'd give you the... Well, give you the benefit of the doubt, and hopefully you've continued along the lines that you showed then. Because I certainly... You so intrigued me that I've actually lived my life by that. I know it probably doesn't look as I have, because... of this almost megalomania that befell me. But I have lived it by the truth. And, right. So, Eton. Yes. So that's really why I'm here. Well, one of the reasons, but I've also looked over your plans and I must say I'm pretty impressed with what you're saying. We do need to, you know, rescue the world before our fellow human beings destroy the thing and burn it to scorched earth, this Garden of Eden, into ash, as it were. Yes. Good. Well, yes, but please, come on, sit down, let's talk. And if you don't mind me saying, I now have a sort of a little bit of a remembrance, but were you not quite dark in colour when I rescued you? You were Chilean. You still are, obviously, but your family were a sort of a dark in appearance. That's true, and this is another thing that you know. So this angelic, well, most of the crew were also a lot of those were. Varying colours. They are, well, they're all angelic and, you know, and Nordic in appearance. Yes, yes, but they weren't when they joined me, I can assure you that.
Really?
So what have you, what do you do, give them a skin bleach each day or something? And a little Michael Jackson sort of thing? Or what are you doing? No, 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 nothing like that. I'll explain. It's all to do with, you know, the new messenger viruses and things that we've been tinkering with, shall we say. You see, I, as you can see, well, seemingly I'm the richest man in the world. I'm obviously not short of a doubloon or two, and, well, I can engage myself, shall we say, in a futuristic fantasia. I see. So, have you done something, shall we say, quite creative with your own genome, DNA, as it were? Sort of. It's, yeah, I think you better explain, because are you telling me then that all this crew that's here, yes, are the melanin has been altered in slightly, well, quite considerably in most cases, but, right, well, I don't understand, but go on. Well, you called me. You go first. Well, I didn't actually call you. This was sort of, shall we say, ordained by someone else. Not you. No. Someone works for you? No. No, a higher ordination, as it were. A higher entity. Oh, no, please. Please don't tell me. I'm here to sort of... If you're a spiritual type of guru that's belongs to some sacred sect, then we're not going to get along, I can assure you. And I don't want to join. No. Not in the slightest. I'm, in fact, I'm very similar to you. I'm almost an anti-theist and complete atheist. Right, good. If you don't mind me saying, you look very, very young to say that we met at school. In fact, you look so incredibly young that... How old are your cells at the moment? If you've altered them, obviously, somehow, which we're going to find out how. Yes, well, they've altered me. And what age are you at now, roughly? Oh, no, we're all 21. Right. You sure? As far as we know. I mean... Obviously, I'm not. Obviously, I'm 59 years of age, same age as you. But, you're telling me that everyone here, the entire crew and everything is 21 years of age. That seems to be the ideal sort of age for the supercell that we've created. I see. A supercell. Right, I thought this was going to be fairly simple, but obviously not. So, how's this happened? How have you... Well, as you can see, and as you've no doubt researched, I own virtually everything, but the main thing, the main reason that I've done this, the main reason I've become such a multi-megalomaniac, in a sense, is to get my hands on all the technology. I needed the computers, you see, all the supercomputers. I needed them aligned to do what we have got to do, right? So have you discovered then, obviously, the meaning of life and the holy grail of immortality then? Not quite. But you're 21 years of age, and so is all your crew. Yes, and will I be... Well, I don't know. It's found us, you see. I don't know whether it's going to jump on us. I don't know whether it's going to be a pandemic or anything. I don't think it is. It's just that, well, there we have it. It's altered my DNA. Right. I don't really understand. I don't quite get this at all. So you've got all the supercomputers, yes. Yes, and I needed them. We don't have any time to lose, and of course, as you've seen with the pandemics, that we are now able to quickly come up with, shall we say, a new mRNA virus, messenger to quickly resolve cancers and obviously COVID and all this sort of different thing. Obviously, let's get back on track. Before our sort of mischievous mortal destroys everything and itself in this Garden of Eden, we're going to have to get moving rather quickly, because it's basically, I've looked at the computers and the computers are spat out. We've virtually have a decade to arrest what they're doing, in a sense. So these supercomputers, then, what have you been doing with them? Well, we haven't been doing anything. We've let them run. We've given them their 6 degrees of separation from us, their freedom, and they themselves have been almost in competition and sort of cooperation with each other, and they've come up with everything. As you know, through your own experience, there's billions of increments they do each minute. What would take us 1,000 years, they do each minute. So many of them now, and well, it's come to our attention that they're also, I don't know how, but you remember Immanuel Kant, of course, do you? Yes. You remember what he said? He had this almost, he called it synchronicity, that alarming substance of, shall we say, coincidence that comes together and, well, aligns. And well, these supercomputers of ours seem to create the perfect situation or environment for this to happen. Almost they create a singularity of alignment where the synchronicity can happen. It's almost spiritual. Or it seems rather spiritual, I see. I see. But I've not really explored. Well, you've not particularly had much to do with these computers. I mean, they do cost a billion pounds each, so you're hardly going to get your hands on one. But you will. And this is where, you know. So you're definitely not a sect or anything, because I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be joining your crew if you're. No. And, you know, I'm similar to you. I do really want to shine a window of hope, a light of hope into this incredible darkness of the silliness and savageness that our Homo sapien is involved in. I want us to combat that together. So, with our computers and this and that, immunization, we can hopefully, you know, bring about a complete change and make up good. So, how then did you, how did you alter your own DNA, as it were? Or how did the supercomputers come up with the necessary code? Ah, well, that's incredible, because that's the thing I'm talking about. They came up with this all on their own, and is it everlasting? Well, we don't know, but it does rejuvenate. We do have a perpetuating particle type of thing, a supercell that rejuvenates. And what we set the task for these supercomputers to do was to, as you know, in space, our feeble flesh disintegrates and decays quite rapidly. In fact, after 6 months in the space station, as you know, they stretch it out absolutely near to death due to lack of gravity, and also, well, you know what happens. And well, before you sits the guinea pig that's, you know, well, is trying out the supercell for that reason. NASA wanted it, and we set the computers against each other, and eventually they did actually come up with this. So this perpetuating pleasure particle or Genesis gene that you've put together is obviously, well, it's obviously working. You're getting younger. But does it stabilise? Because, as you know, with cloning and all these sorts of things, Dolly the sheep, they sort of also disintegrate rather rapidly. Yes. Well, yes, it seems to, you know, the gene is not fraying, as it were. And it's almost like trying on a brand new pair of Levi's just as the day you bought them. Well, fantastic. Well, they will be pleased at Woodstock, won't they? You can join, well, introduce this to every single hippie commune. They'll love it. Yes. And also the, shall we say, the changing of colour. I don't suppose it changes gender, does it? That we don't know, but... and what about familiar, you know, so, well, anyway. So basically, what have they, but how have they done it? Well, that's it. What they did is reconstruct the DNA that we've obviously been throwing away, the junk DNA. The junk RNA and DNA of our own double helix that we've never even paid any attention to, because we're so sort of so mesmerised with our own mortality that we've never got away from the double helix, thanks to Crick and Watson. We've chucked the rest of the DNA, junk DNA, in the bin, basically. And, well, the supercomputers have found a necessary code of, well, it seems this
is really approaching where we should have been. It's taken millions of years of evolution, as you know, to get to this chimpanzee stage, and we're still 99.5% chimp, which we really shouldn't have been. There was obviously a pedigree panspermiation that did land 4.5 billion years ago on this planet, and well, we've been obsessed with marvelling at our own mammalian species. We forgot to have a look at what was going on, properly have a look at what was going on. Anyway, the computers have got close to where we should be, and and this is it. This is where we're going, is it? Seems that way. As you know, it's all about melanin anyway, not just neural melanin, but and colour and everything. But from a catastrophe of cosmic catastrophe of planets colliding, the and also nuclear, shall we say, Chernobyl and things, that you know that the first ever sort of life that's born from that is the black mold, obviously, that comes back on the space stations and things is mainly, as you realize, a form of acid similar to LSD. Right. So you're not going to tell me that we're all going to be turning into some sort of monkey that's munching through magic mushrooms constantly to keep ourselves startlingly Anglo-Saxon white or something. Oh, no. But it's obviously, it does open the infinite monkey cage and allow us to move across to the sapient soul, sort of sage cage, as it were. Good. Well, it's been a good start, and you're the living embodiment of obviously what supercomputers can do, and left to their own deviant devices, they come up with all sorts. And is there any sort of side effects to this Frankenstein formation that you've created? Doesn't seem so at the moment. Apart from the odd thing, like your appendix and your certain things wake up, you're able to eat virtually any sort of fodder, as it were. Not meat, of course, but you become a total herbivore. Oh. Appendix and tonsils and all that sort of begin to work again. But the main thing we've found, which is what I'm coming to, the most impressive thing, obviously, is the decalcification of your pineal gland in the in your in inside your brain. It's which has always been a bit of a misnomer, the third eye, as it were. As Descartes, René Descartes said, it's where the soul sleeps, but well, we don't know about that. But anyway, it does all sort of decalcify that, and that's why you will have probably been dream timing me and me dream timing you during the night. Because I think we're almost twinned in sentience and sense, as it were. Because we found that with this sort of massive decalcification, it also, as you realize, it's right where the blood-brain barrier meets, and most of everything flows over it. But also now that it's awoken, shall we say, the third eye is open, that we found that the synaptic spark is incredible, and this offers what sort of almost a sort of an ESP understanding between each other without being too coy. I have a signal and you have a signal, and we seem to be tuning in, as it were. And I think what's happening is that obviously the cosmic microwave background somehow is being channeled, or part of something is being channeled. So you've become sort of a radio receiver or something, an unplugged TV or something. Yeah. Well, possibly some sort of star static is entwining us together, shall we say? And well, you know how many trillions and trillions of tons of the Big Bang cosmic background stuff's there. It's masses and masses of it. Anyway, you seem to be tuning in on the same wavelength as what I am, and the supercoms, well, they're picking up on it also, and it's become quite a continuum, as it were, as it is from the Big Bang. I mean, it's been a continuum now for 13.5 billion years, but we've not really been completely involved. So don't tell me then that you're, shall we say, transmitting this back to the mothership, as it were. No, but as Kant and Descartes hinted at, it does have a sort of spiritual mystic intrigue to me that, shall we say, everything seems to be linking in a signal type of singularity. Right. It seems quite bad. Is it binary what you're getting or what you're feeling? No, not at all. Right, so how are the computers? Well, I don't know. This is the thing. This seems to be a line more than just what we think. The synchronicity and the singularity is very, very strange. And what else have you found? Well, that's another alarming thing. Do you remember the Star of Bethlehem? Oh, God, here we go. What did I say at the beginning of this conversation? I don't want to be joining any sort of Abrahamic apartheid or... I don't... sect of any sort. No, it's not that, but I have to bring this on because, as you realise, we can now track forward and backwards on the mapping of, shall we say, our galaxy in a sense. And we've had a look back and we're finding that, remember the comet that was probably one of the biggest hyperbolic comets ever seen that hung in the sky for quite some time, several days as it were, in 44 BC. Well, we've had the computers track back, and that is also part of this equation. The comet that was there has relevance to this, right? How? Well, as you know, it was called the Caesar Star. Everybody thought it was the soul of Caesar because he'd been murdered at that time, around 44 BC exactly. But go on. Well, the supercoms, as you know, can track forward too. And it seems that, everything is aligning again for this thing to... Well, it's on its way back, basically. And it is sending a signal... Not via you, surely. Well, it's so faint with me. I mean, I do dream time this. There is something. But the computers and everything points to this thing arriving back, which is very, very unusual, as you must realise. So, the alignment of everything and this junk DNA and the supercell and the Genesis gene, do you think this is something to do with it? Well, that's the thing. We were looking at the computers and we suddenly found out that the code for all alignment of the junk DNA, which is in me and also in my crew, of course, is not just a coincidence. Or it's... Well, what are you saying? Well, the digitalization of all DNA on the planet, as you know, we've been obsessed with it for such a point for decades and decades that we've... analysed every single thing, every soil sample, every core sample that's ever been taken. And let's face it, the Earth is now like some Swiss cheese with the amount of stuff that we've pulled out of it. Mainly for shale gas and oil exploration and everything. Go on, but what? Well, it seems that we... One of the core samples that, under the permafrost in Russia, found a deposit of something that was pure from... Millions and millions of years ago. Billions of years ago, or whether we just don't know yet. But we can only go back so far a million years or something, can't we, in DNA? It's not DNA. It's not RNA or DNA. It seems to be some sort of almost compressed... Is it biological? No. So what is it? Well, all we can call it is an ETRNA at the moment. What, an extraterrestrial RNA? Yeah, but it's not an RNA. Is it protein? No. Is it alive? I don't think so. Is it dead? It sends out a code similar to quartz, you know, like a digital watch, but much more than that. Much more than that. So,
So what is it? We don't know. But you do realize that the comet was at probably the same time as what... You're not going to tell me that this is some sort of second coming, are you, of God Google or... Jesus Christ, you are. Exactly, Jesus Christ. We don't understand. It's like some sort of reenactment of a digitalized deity. We don't know how it's happening, but the singularity and the synchronization and synchronicity of everything is aligning to this point, digitally. Oh my God. Exactly. So much for our, shall we say, atheism, eh?